From WXXI News, this is Connections. I'm Evan Dawson. Our connection this hour was made this past weekend when the world was watching another royal wedding. You might not have heard, they kept it really low-key. They just invited a few family and friends, told everybody no cameras. That's not true at all. Of course, it was watched by millions of people around the world, and the royal family celebrating the arrival of Meghan Markle in the royal family, Prince Harry and Meghan Markle marrying this weekend. Well, that set off an interesting conversation in various quarters of the internet, especially with Americans who don't sort of get the whole monarchy thing. A lot of people saying, well, it's 2018. Why does anybody need a monarchy these days? And if you do that and you have any British friends, an interesting conversation will ensue because you're going to hear about history. You're going to hear about tourism, the impact, the cost to the average British citizen, and whether there's a return on the investment. You'll also hear about values and possible social impact. So this hour, we're going to ask our guests the question, is it time to abolish the monarchy? It's 2018, and I think we're going to have some interesting points of view shared. Well, I know we are, because we had a chance to pre-interview some of our guests who are here. And two of the three, by the way, are not from Rochester. Anthony Davies is visiting from Cornwall, is that right?
That's right,
And yeah. What brings you to Rochester?
I'm visiting my daughter and my grandson.
Well, thank you for being here. Nice to have you here.
It's a great pleasure.
Jeff Ward is here from Norwich, you said?
Yes, very near to Norwich, a small market town just outside Norwich called Wyndham.
And what brings you to Rochester?
I lived here about 21 years ago for 9 or 3 years, and I married a girl from Rochester. And I'm going to be awfully nice to her because she's sitting right outside.
That means you're still married to the girl from Rochester.
For now.
Welcome, Jeff. Thank you for
being
here.
Thank you very much. It's a
Colin
pleasure.
Coffey is now a Rochesterian, whether he likes it or not.
I love it.
Well, I'm glad to hear that. And it's great to have you back here. Nice
Thank
to see you.
You.
I guess I want to start just by asking a general landscape question, where you stand on the question of if you were actually voting tomorrow on abolishing the monarchy, where our guests stand on that. And then we're going to kind of talk about a lot of the layers involved here. And so let's go around the table. Jeff, if you were voting on a referendum tomorrow, time to abolish the monarchy, you would say?
Absolutely not. I would definitely keep the monarchy.
And the short reason, we'll get into much more why, but the short reason is what?
The short reason is the history. Hundreds
well,
of
you would
years.
Still have history.
I know we would. I was expecting that.
Well, that's the obvious one.
it's hard to put into one sentence, but the Queen and the royal family bring in so much revenue into the country by way of tourism. They do so much for charity. And I know you can do all of that sort of thing without a monarchy, but I love having a monarchy.
Okay. Colin Coffey.
I would vote yes to keep it, but to reform it and to have a conversation about why do we have a hereditary monarchy? What does that say about us as a society?
Was there a time in your life when you would have voted to abolish?
Oh, yes. Yeah.
So you've evolved on this one.
Yep. Okay. People do.
I know they do. We celebrate that when that happens in a world where obstinance is always celebrated. No, interesting. Okay. So that's a vote to keep but reform.
Correct.
All right. We'll talk about what that means as we go throughout the hour. Anthony.
Yeah, I think I'd take a similar position to Colin. It would depend which hat I had on, though, as to what my answer was going to be. In a sort of ideal position, I think I'm an egalitarian. So I think the happiest countries are the ones with the smallest gap between the richest and the poorest. So anything that makes the gap bigger, from my point of view, is not a good thing. And I think the monarchy is part of the establishment in our country and does contribute to that those differences. However, you've also got to think about what you replace it with. That's where I'm putting my practical hat on.
Well, this is where the ignorance of Americans, which just means me, comes in here. When you say what you'd replace it with, Americans who are sort of observing from the outside would say you'd replace it with nothing. You know, you keep your parliamentary government, but why do you need a monarchy?
That's fair comment. The monarch has very restricted powers. They have formal powers, but in practice, a lot of them are just sort of notional, really. But I think, is it Jeff, sorry?
Yes.
Jeff was saying how important their role is in the sort of public sphere. Okay, you can say about bringing money in and so on. So I think it's because they are an integral part of the British psyche. That's the problem. We have a long discussion these days about what is it to be British because of Brexit, you know, whether we're going to leave Europe and so on. So I think the monarchy is very much part of us. I mean, they've been evolving for 1,000 years, so you can't just unpick that overnight. And that's, I'm trying to answer your question about don't, you know, what do you replace it with? But I think it would leave a big gap in our
sort of a social psyche.
Yes, I think so. Yeah.
Yeah, and that's Anthony's point is an interesting one that I hadn't considered. Brexit alone has shifted a little bit of the psyche of what it means, and then abolishing the monarchy would just be upheaval, I think, right now. Of course, I've seen a very highbrow show called The Windsors, in which there was a vote on keeping the monarchy, and they decided to keep it. But Colin, for you, and it's not very highbrow at all, of course. Colin, for you, what was the evolution? Why did you, in your younger years, and not that you're in the twilight years, I mean younger than now, why did you change?
I think the reason, Evan, was I was born in England, just outside London, St. Albans, but my parents are both working class Irish immigrants and Catholic. So I grew up with immigrant Irish Catholic parents in an English schooling system. In the 1970s and 80s, when the struggle for Ireland to be free of the British monarchy was still ongoing. And so I felt a very strong lack of understanding for the love that the British people have for the English monarchy. And, you know, some of the people that I grew up around, you know, would even refer to Queen Elizabeth I as the bastard Queen of England. Because she was...
Jeff just blanched.
Yeah, exactly. So, yeah, and I think with what was said about the egalitarian, you know, it's sort of fundamentally reactionary. But I think it's also, as someone who studied history at Sussex University, there's also the element that England's been asked this question before, and maybe the past experience with Cromwell as Lord Protector of the English Republic, the first European country to really cut off the head of the monarch. Everyone thinks of the French as revolutionary, but the Brits are quite implacable. And I think if you ask my Irish family, would we want Cromwell back, given what he went on to do to the Irish? I think the answer would be no. So I don't know. My mum has evolved a lot on the question of the British monarchy, and I think other comments from people I know are, well, they're toothless now, they're not doing any harm, and people like them. So.
Toothless isn't really just ceremonial.
You know? She has no political power, really.
Do you think the British public, and again, this is a huge generalization, but forgive my ignorance, is that a welcome development, that lack of political power?
Yeah, I think because the British Parliament has had, you know, hundreds of years of experience of trying to control. I think we forget sometimes what is monarchy. Monarchy is the divine right of kings and queens, absolute power, no trial by jury. That's how it started. And the English have had a very long history and a successful history in seeking to restrain their monarchies.
Yep. Okay. Well, so, Jeff, let me explore a little bit more about why you on the panel are the most avowed supporter of the monarchy. And so what particularly gives you this affection in light of what Anthony, when he talks about wanting a more egalitarian society?
Actually, I'd like to pick on two things.
Yeah, sure, please.
That my learned gentleman opposite the table. This feels quite confrontational. I'm over here, they're over there, and we're going to draw swords at any moment. Colin said something about evolving. Keep the monarchy, but evolve it. And I actually see that happening with the royal wedding. The prince is a very different, I think, a very different type of monarch. And I actually see that happening. And that could be a very good thing. And Brexit, I don't see a connection with the monarchy at all regarding Brexit. Brexit's a totally political and business thing, and I don't see a connection whatsoever. Mm.
No, I was thinking in terms of what I said about the British psyche. You know, what is it to be British, which I think we do perhaps struggle a bit to define. Whereas other nations, I guess the US probably have a very strong image of themselves in terms of their identity and what they're all about. I think because we're a very long-established democracy, we're not so. I don't think we have. We feel we have to prove anything so much. We've had a huge empire in the past. We have a more modest role, which I think, as a country, we're struggling to accept. Actually, you know, they talk about Britain punching above its weight and all that sort of stuff, and I think we have to accept that we're changing in terms of our global role. And I think that discussion could include things like Brexit and the monarchy are all part of what we are.
I don't see the royal family ending in anywhere in the near future whatsoever. No. I just don't see that happening. I cannot see how it could possibly happen.
No, I agree. I think I said earlier on, you know, what's the alternative? And evolution is definitely far preferable to revolution, because revolution is going to be catastrophic.
Right. Well, the Brexit went to the votes amongst the British people. It was a referendum. It was not legally binding, but everyone is agreeing with its results. Mm. Well, everyone is going along with its results. Mm. I do not see a referendum ever coming on whether the royal family would be demolished.
I hope not demolished. But what is it, Jeff, then, that gives you this affinity for this family and for
really
this whole
know.
System? You don't know.
It's hard to put into words. I really don't know. If you ask me, why do I like the royal family? I've never met them. I don't know. It's a strange thing, isn't it? But I am very much pro, simply because I see Charles on the television. Prince Charles on the television and radios, and I listen to him, and I think, what a great guy, so well-educated, so well-spoken, and...
I would hope he's well-educated. They've got all the money and opportunity in the world. Yeah.
And somebody once asked me, Jeff, if you could invite anyone around for dinner, for good conversation and dinner, who would it be? And I thought for a minute, I said, Prince Charles. And their mouth hit the table. I said, why? And I said, well, what great conversation. What a great guy. He's all for eco things. He's all for... he hates the modern sort of buildings that's coming up everywhere. He loves the traditional things, and so do I.
What do you make of Will and Harry and the direction they have set? Do you see them as evolving sort of... the public interaction? And I'll give you an example from the American perspective. Will and Kate came in 2014, shortly after the birth of George, their first son, right? It's George. Mm-hmm. And they went to see a Cleveland Cavaliers basketball game to see our king, LeBron James. And they wanted to meet him, and LeBron James had a little jersey for Prince George and then posed for pictures, and LeBron James did not know that you are just not... touch the royals, so he put his arms around them for a picture. It was really sweet and lovely, and Kate, being as gracious as she is, didn't have any problems with it, but the British press did, and LeBron got a lecture about that. But I thought Will and Kate just said, who cares?
Yeah, it happened to the Queen when she visited Australia a few years ago.
Yeah, and I think Michelle Obama did the same thing, didn't know that, well, you don't touch the Queen. But I sense at least some of those separations. You talk about inegalitarian. We are not to be touched is pretty inegalitarian. Mm.
Excuse me, did you say you shouldn't touch the Queen? I've lost my knighthood.
Have you got a knighthood?
Yeah. Jeff, you buried the lead on us. Yeah. So, Sir Jeff, do you...
So you weren't joking about the swords then?
Do you see this, though, evolving, at least becoming more approachable in any way? Or do you not want it to change in any way?
The new prince, the prince who got married just the other day. Well... I do see him bringing about some change. However, with the problem of terrorism and things that's going on, I cannot see them being any more approachable to the public than they are. Hmm. I mean, if ever, you've only had to look at the royal wedding. I missed it because I'm actually over here for a wedding on the same day. I had two invites. So I had to let one upside down. and I didn't watch it live, but I did watch it on WXXI the next day. And you only have to look at it and see the amount of people and the crowds and the waving of the Union Jack flag. And it's one massive patriarchal. It's wonderful. It's really, really good.
Patriotic.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
You said patriarchal. I think you meant patriotic.
Yeah, maybe.
Okay. Medmenball. it's a Kinsley gaffe, we call in this country.
Could I chip in with Diana's funeral, which was also an enormous state occasion with millions of people involved. But that was a very, very critical time for the monarchy because I read something that said after Diana's funeral, 75% of British people wanted the monarchy to change in a quite fundamental way, and they favoured the sort of model that you have in the Netherlands and Scandinavia, where monarchs are much more ordinary people. They don't have all this mystique about them. You don't have to, I don't know whether you have to bow and scrape and, you know, curtsy and walk backwards when you meet them and that type of thing, which to me is just insane in a modern world that anybody should be deferred to in that way. I don't think that goes with the modern world at all.
Is that insane to you, or you think that's just custom?
I just don't think you can be part of the monarchy in our present Queen's time and be a normal person. I just don't see how you can be.
But that doesn't bother you?
Not so slightest. Why should it?
Okay. Colin, you want to edit that before I grab a couple of phone calls?
I'd turn the question around a little bit, not so much how the monarchy wants to change itself, but how do ordinary people want to view the monarchy and participate with it in a rational way? Because it is an irrational concept, you know, hereditary monarchy. It speaks of something that's not egalitarian. It's not about how much hard work you do. You're just born into it.
Yeah, it's not earned at all.
And you like it, we'll lump it. And you get a public, you get taxpayers having to pay for you. Although £333 million is a lot better value for money than $5 billion spent in the last presidential election here. So, you know, if you're looking for value for money. And then the only other thing I'd say is with regard to hugging, there's a Health and Safety at Work Act. you know, if you're hugging and meeting that many different people and you don't want to be sick three quarters of the year, perhaps you're not going to want to hug and kiss everybody.
Okay.
And a little, you know, a little difference might be
maybe
there.
Maybe fist bumps for everybody. But yeah. but to be more serious about this, you know, I take Jeff's point that in the modern era of terrorism, the notion of real accessibility is going to be difficult.
Very difficult.
When security must be ensured. Mm. But Colin, can I ask you, Diana was someone who appeared with, and it's similar to me to Pope Francis, you know, being willing to stop a procession, go wash the feet of someone in poverty, interact. There was a report last weekend that Pope Francis told a gay Catholic, "You are who God made you." You know, and I saw some parallels there with Diana, of all people, and the way that she sort of was more willing, I think, to be among people.
Yeah, when I was working across the House from the House of Commons in my first job at British Telecom, I was a gay man in my private life, but not my public life. And so it was during the time when HIV/AIDS was just literally, you'd have people who were around who weren't around the following week. And there was mass hysteria from the British tabloid press about how you could catch it from a teacup. Well, catch it from a teacup at that time meant that we'd all have teacups in the workplace and you washed them out. So literally it was saying you could catch HIV off a gay man at work. And Diana blew that whole thing up with a ton of dynamite and just went into a hospital and hugged a young man who was dying of AIDS. And that was it. She used her role in order to educate and help people understand. And I've always liked her. I watched a few. Mm-hmm. I've never watched a royal wedding, but I watched Diana's funeral, and I cried like a baby.
Mm-hmm. And did that impact you personally in your own personal life?
Well, just a practical, not feeling like a target. Mm-hmm. If someone finds out you're gay, then you're not immediately going to be assumed to be a health hazard at work, and that was how stupid the whole thing had got. Mm-hmm. And she just put a pin in that bubble.
That's a beautiful story, and I appreciate you sharing that, because certainly we can sort of have a little fun talking about the monarchy, but there is still power of influence, no doubt about that. And in our second half hour, we'll talk more to our guests about how they see the individual members of the royal family. What are the impacts they are leaving, or what do they hope they might leave? Let me get a couple of phone calls in. I'm going to start with a question from Paul in Brighton. He just wanted to know, with the influx of younger members of the royal family, will there be change that could lead to a highly modified monarchy? And I don't know, you know, what kind of modification that would be. You'd like to see some modification, Anthony?
Yes, I would. But yes, first of all, I think I would say that Harry and William are definitely Diana's sons. And that was something that was coming out very strongly in the broadcasts, that they are much more approachable and they're going to be very much involved in all sorts of different ways to help ordinary people. So that's carrying on her tradition, I think. So that might go some way towards, you know, changing it, making them more approachable. One thing I was going to throw in is that there's a phrase called the cycling monarchy, and evidently this is places like Holland and Scandinavia, where the monarchs have really just made themselves into much more ordinary people. They're quite popular, I think. They've done that. So that would be maybe one extreme of how you could evolve and get rid of all the mystique.
Okay. What kind of modification do you think is possible?
I don't know. I think it's got to be up to the British people themselves to decide. I totally get what Jeff's saying, how much so many people love the royal family, and particularly just on a practical working class level. If you're living in London, it's been a very stressful 5 years. You've got terrorism, you've got knife attacks, you've got all the stress around what's going to happen to the economy, austerity. There's sort of instability in a lot of areas. And just to have a day off and for people to be able to just, as a friend of mine said, you know, it's nice to follow a romance, even if it's not yours, and you're never going to have one.
Jeff, do you want to see any modification?
I don't know if I do. The Queen and the Duke of Edinburgh, I have to admit, do come across as a bit of a stuffy characters. I think that's developed later in their lives. But do I want to see any serious change? I don't think I do.
Okay.
I do see Prince Harry maybe changing the monarchy slightly. I don't know how that would happen. I think it would just be natural evolving. But I don't think there would be any cause to change it or any plans to change it. I just think that might evolve.
Okay, let me get Gary in Rochester on the phone next. Go ahead, Gary.
Well, thank you, Evan. I'm glad you're having this conversation. As somebody that has spent the last few years studying the Canadian system of government and the British system of government, I think what's hard for Americans to grasp is the service that the monarchy pays to the people, and the purpose of the monarchy and service to and protector of the final protector of the common man's rights. And this goes back to English history when we had Cromwell take over as Lord Protector and executed Charles. And then later we bring the monarchy back. And, you know, it's, again, difficult for Americans to wrap their heads around this, because we have to remember she's not just the Queen of England. She's also the Queen of Canada, the Queen of Australia, the Queen of New Zealand, and other places. In fact, when you go to Ottawa, she's not referred to as the Queen of England, but the Queen of Canada. When she had her 60th anniversary, the CBC did a survey, and they found overwhelmingly Canadians wanted to keep the monarchy. Because what they see is you have to remember, she doesn't rule, but she reigns. And that in the end, everything has to go through her as that protector. And she's only had to do this twice in Elizabeth's reign. And once, and we have to remember, back in the 70s, Australia had a financial crisis, and they almost went into a government shutdown, what we do. The Governor General, on behalf of the Queen, had mentioned that if that was the case, she was going to push for a snap election in the Parliament, a vote of confidence. That was enough to settle the question and resolve it. And that's why they don't have government shutdowns. The only other time is if we remember back when Quebec was talking about a referendum to leave Canada. And the Queen came and visited and said, you know, I'm not going to tell you whether you should vote to leave or not, but here's the things that will happen if you leave. And it was a voice that could be listened to. And I think this actually connects to your last hour, Evan, when you talked about, in fact, you brought it up, how Democrats or Republicans, you know, really start to hate each other and dehumanize each other. But what the British and other people have that have a monarchy is they have her, in this case, in common. So no matter what your political differences are, you have this one thing that unites us or unites them. And you know, that's actually something that we don't have. So, you know, I actually wish, and when I look at our current situation, that we could send Elizabeth a letter and say, like, we're really sorry. It was impetuous. We were young. Can we please come back? Thank you.
Jeez, Gary. I don't think it's going to happen, Gary. You're going to be deeply disappointed. By the way, I so often forget that she's the Queen of Canada, that someone in the newsroom this morning mentioned, well, she's the Queen of Canada. And my reaction was, wait, they gave Meghan Markle Canada? That's what you get? I didn't realize they were talking about Queen Elizabeth. I'd forgotten. And Gary's right on the polls. I mean, I don't know about Canadian polls wanting to keep the Queen. But the latest polls that I have seen, and producer Megan Mack pulling together some numbers here, roughly 75-76% in recent polls of the British public favor remaining a monarchy. And the same number says they think the monarchy has an important role to play in the future of Britain. About 20 years ago, it was about 67% in favor. So it's actually gained 7 or 8 percentage points in 20 years. So there's no danger of a referendum taking the monarchy out. But let's go around the table and ask. Jeff, do you have friends, colleagues, et cetera, who differ with you politically? And does a monarchy give you a connective tissue that we don't have in this country? Gary sees that. Do you?
First of all, well done, Gary. I'm way behind you. If you want to come over to London, I'll buy you a beer. Do I have friends? What was the question?
Well, I mean, Gary's saying that Democrats and Republicans, broadly speaking, in this country are so much at odds that it feels like we dehumanize one another in just basic conversation. And that at least in the UK, you have a royal family that's a connective tissue that everyone has in common.
I don't know if that's true, actually. I don't think it is.
Are you just applauding Gary and now you're refuting his point?
We're sitting around the table here with not really conflicting thoughts here. I mean, we're almost together on this.
Yeah, yeah.
But if there was a couple of anti-royal people here, I think you'd hear a very different conversation.
Yeah, and there are some. I mean, again, about a quarter of the British public. Colin, you think Gary's making a point there that you've got this collective tissue, the royal family, at least you have that in common?
Well, I think obviously it's different from for the immigrants and the children of immigrants. You know, the United Kingdom and the England of 1945 is not the England of 2018. It's much more racially diverse and a lot more nationalities there. And then the influx of people that came through the European Union when free labor movement allowed millions to come from Eastern Europe into England, or maybe 1.5 million. I do think that there's an addendum I'd like to add to Gary's reference back to Cromwell, which was when Cromwell was finally died of natural causes at 59 years of age, when the monarchy was restored in the Glorious Revolution, his memorial and body was dug up, taken out of Westminster Abbey. The dead body was beheaded, and then chucked on a pile to burn. So, you know, that was the end of the English Republic.
And you're the civilized ones.
Well, exactly. I think people don't realise quite how tough the Brits could be, or brutal. But if you talk to the Irish, you'll hear a different side.
Listening to that, Gary, you better not come over.
I just keep going back to what Anthony said about egalitarianism. And I just think the very phrase divine right of kings, should probably, in my own view, be abolished from world society. But again, that's why we've got these programs and these debates. Mm-hmm. And Anthony, do you think Gary makes a point that sounds like it resonates with you, that when you disagree with people politically, does the monarchy give you any point of common reference or interest?
I think our political complexion is very different from the US because it's nowhere near as polarized, in terms of who's on the right, who's on the left, who's in the center. We've got a number of four or five you might call mainstream parties. Who occupies, I guess the Conservatives traditionally occupy the right, and they might be regarded as the natural supporters of a monarchy, whereas you might say that perhaps the most left are Labour, and at the moment Jeremy Corbyn, who's in charge, is reckoned to be fairly left. He's definitely a socialist, if not, I'm not sure whether he's a communist or not. And I know he is, and he is a Republican. He's definitely an anti-monarchist. But I think, overall, our politics are more a grey, you know, like a spectrum. You don't have the two poles in quite the same way. So I don't think it's right to necessarily see the royal family as being a counterbalance. To that.
No, they're certainly not. The Queen, I did hear, all my life I've always thought the Queen wasn't allowed to vote, but I have heard recently that she can actually vote, she chooses not to. And right. I don't know if that's true or not, but I'd like to think it is true. Whoever wins the general election, whichever party, and usually it's Conservative or Labour, they go to the Queen and ask permission to form a government, yes. And the Queen has no say as to whether one party is going to win, one party is going to lose. No. So I don't know if she would actually be able to quell any arguments between any, you know, whether Labour's or the Conservatives.
I think one thing that is a unifying factor that the British people who live in the United Kingdom have that people who live in the United States of America don't have is a National Health Service. And that binds people of all classes and all backgrounds at some of the most difficult times. And it was the British Labour government, the first majority Labour Party government, that ousted Winston Churchill from office rather unexpectedly in 1945, that pioneered and set up that institution that we desperately need here in the United States and don't have yet still.
Anthony Eden, I believe, wasn't it?
Anthony Eden.
Was Anthony Eden? Form the National Health Service?
He was involved in it, yeah, I believe. Yeah. It was a joint effort.
It's a wonderful thing. And you ask any, I think that is one thing the Americans don't seem to understand, because a lot of Americans who, I don't know, they just don't get it. They have their system here of private health care. We don't really get that. But I was very seriously ill not very long ago. I had a pulmonary embolism, if you don't know what that is, a blood clot in the lungs, and I was lucky to have survived one hour. Well, thank God for the National Health.
Yeah, because you didn't get God a huge bill. You didn't have
didn't
to worry about having insurance.
Well,
or did you?
I'm over 60, young man. I'm 2 years away from being 70, so I now don't even pay for my prescriptions.
Great. And if you live in London, you've got free unlimited travel as well.
I get free unlimited travel throughout the entire United Kingdom, actually.
Yep.
But Jeff, you've got your bride from Rochester. Maybe I can
I forgot about her.
Maybe I can entice you to come back here, because you could have had the same situation here.
I could have done.
With all of the joys of uncertainty about insurance, tens of thousands of dollars of bills, stress.
That is a very good point. And I moved here, married Karen. Hi, Karen. And
I've got to say hi to my husband now too. Hi, Michael.
Anthony, go ahead. What do you want?
Deborah, in UK.
Deborah. Hi. Oh, I know. No, I sort
of. Of course, you do.
I moved here, married Karen in this town, and we lived here for nearly 3 years. And throughout that time, I think at the start of it, her employers gave me some insurance as well, if I remember. I cannot remember. But as soon as I got my green card, which took quite a while to get, we went back to England. And there we stayed. We've been there for quite a number of years now. And we did seriously think about moving back to this country 4 or 5 years ago, maybe. And it was because of my health and the national health that I need that answered the question. We just couldn't afford it. Couldn't come.
Well, I'm glad you're doing well.
Thank you very much.
Embolism, and there was a cheeky tweet with a picture of Harry and Meghan Markle in their carriage under the headline, here's the secret insurance companies don't want you to know about getting universal health care in the United States.
When was that?
You have to marry into the royal family. I don't know who wrote the tweet. Yeah, that was kind of lines up with what Jeff's saying. All right, look, we're late for our only break. We're going to come back to your phone calls. Thomas, we'll take your call on the other side. Brianna, I've got an email from you. Brianna wanted to know, what does the royal family, have they said anything about Donald Trump? I will ask Sir Jeff that. He's probably more likely to know as the only knight on the program. And we're talking with a panel from Britain about whether it's time to keep or whether it's time to abolish the monarchy after another royal wedding. And they all say no for different reasons. And we're enjoying the conversation with Colin Coffey, Jeff Ward, Anthony Davies. Back to your phone calls on the other side of this break. I'm Evan Dawson. Tuesday on The Next Connections. Would cities look different if they were designed primarily by women? Katrina Johnson Zimmerman thinks so. She's an urban anthropologist advocating for gender equality in urban design. And she'll be in Rochester sharing her ideas. In our second hour, the Real Minds film series is underway. One of the films in this year's lineup tells the story of Deej, a non-speaking young man with autism. Remarkable story, and you will meet him Tuesday. All right, welcome back to Connections. I'm Evan Dawson. Talking about the monarchy, and Brianna emailed to ask what the royal family has said about Donald Trump. I think the answer is close to nothing, right?
Yes.
Not officially.
Not officially. I mean, they stay out of politics almost entirely, as we've said, even with American politics, the high wattage American politics, and even with Donald Trump, I think.
I think so.
Yeah, she's been there for 66 years. She welcomed Nixon. She's seen all these world leaders come and go. She doesn't get involved in that.
The Queen has a fantastic record in that sense. I think she's a very consistent. Other members of the royal family have made some gaffes, notably Prince Philip. He's been caught off the record. I can't remember anything specific, but he's made some quite... It suggests he's a fairly colourful character, but, you know, that's in his private capacity. Yeah, officially they keep absolutely quiet about those things.
Appropriately so, in your views?
Yeah, if you're the head of state and you're not political and you're supposed to go along with what your elected body wants... If the elected body wants you to be quiet, then you're quiet, right?
That's right. That's right. They are supposed to be non-party. You know,
apolitical, yeah.
I think one thing we haven't really discussed is how well they do their job. If you think of it as their job, okay, you can argue about whether it's appropriately paid, but it is a job nevertheless, which I think we've all agreed has sort of evolved over time. The Queen is definitely regarded as absolutely, you know, right and good in terms of the way she does it. Nobody can fault her for her sense of duty, and this thing, duty, is what, if you like, justifies, I think, their role to a large extent.
Well said, sir.
Yes,
they are very, very dedicated. Yes, there's no doubt about that.
I think that's fair. Yeah. To say that, and would anybody want to try to do that? You know, that you can say, okay, they're fabulously rich, but would anybody want to spend all that time in the public eye, you know, as you said about shaking thousands of hands, right. You know, and all those things. So nobody's saying it's an easy job from that point of view. And I think that's maybe something to consider, how well they do it.
Okay. And so what kind of roles would you like to see them have going forward? Will, Kate, Harry and Meghan Markle and other members of the royal family, what issues, you know, should be in play? What do you think?
I think they have to definitely be approachable. That's very important. They've got to be able to appear in public. They should have some integrity in the way they behave. And that, again, is quite a difficult thing because particularly if, dare I bring up the woman's role in this, you know, Meghan's role, which I think is, again, very hard for a woman who's very... You feel is very an independent, mm-hmm. Independent woman, self-made woman. Certainly, Diana was not able to adapt to the sort of very rigid life that they wanted her to lead. Apart from the fact that there was a whole skeleton in the cupboard with Camilla, which I don't know whether guys over here know, but you know, Prince Charles all along had this.
Going back to the early 70s, I think.
Yes, yeah, absolutely. So that was sort of, you know, like an elephant in the room in Diana's life. So she really struggled to, and she didn't want to. She didn't want to be tied down in that way. Now, Kate, Dara, I think Kate probably has bought into the sort of childbearing role, and you know, which is a very important one, again, from a dynasty point of view. I don't know how Meghan will adapt to that.
Okay. Are there other social issues? Anything that you think, Colin, that you'd like to see them working on?
Well, I think the backdrop for everyone is just the monarchy isn't just about divine rights of kings, but it was also about this concept of empire. It's quite interesting that the countries that have had votes on whether to keep the Queen as the head of state, Australia and Canada and New Zealand, I believe, these are countries that sort of anchor back to a white, a time when Britain was all white, when the world is changing. Empire represents, I mean, the British Empire, which my new country, the United States, successfully got rid of, and had your own revolution here, has a sort of an emotional tie still with the British monarchy. I notice that everyone loves Downton Abbey. You know, a lot of people are interested in this subject of monarchy, even though this is a republic that fought a war to free itself from a monarchy. So I think Meghan Markle, her background being biracial American, is going to be something that changes the lens. And I think that I think it's too much to expect this of anyone. I don't think that it's reasonable to do what the Queen has done for 66 years as a monarch. I think that's an unbearable load to put on anyone. And I would like to see the royals have more of a personal life, because really they're a constitutional tool that allows a constitutional monarchy. And do they have to have their entire lives lived in a public view? I wouldn't do it, not for all the tea in China.
Or in Britain.
Or in Britain.
Or in a lot of tea.
There's a lot of tea there.
Yeah. John in Rochester, next on the phone. Go ahead, John.
Hey, y'all. Thank you. You were just discussing what you thought of the Queen and the different royals speaking towards anything that's happening in our political system in America. And you could just hear, as an outside observer, you could just hear your respect for what they have accomplished. I don't even know that you really came to the forefront of your consciousness, but she's given you guys a sense of stability over 60 years of watching somebody just be there, just to be comforting, giving you some sort of sense of foundation. That I think that that's what the monarchy has brought to you guys, you know, as a country and as the Commonwealth. What she has done with the Commonwealth is also just amazing. And I just wanted to, you know, mention that in our times right now, we're kind of going, oh boy, look at what's going on. And you guys are like, oh, look at what that Labour Party's doing. Look what that party's doing. But at the same time, the Queen's always there. And she's just, you guys have just had so much stability because of her. And I just kind of wanted to bring that up. I could hear it in your voice, but nobody really said it. Hmm. And Colin, David Proctor says hi. Thank you, guys.
Oh, thank you.
Thank you, John. I don't know. Are you stacking our phone calls this hour? I'm kidding.
Oh, no idea. I played the fifth.
Is there more stability? Does it feel more stable? Because through any turmoil, the Queen, as you said, that's an unbearable load, 66 years, but that stability that John is observing.
Yeah, I think so.
You're not along with it, Jeff, yeah?
I would definitely go along with that. And if you go back to the Second World War, the Queen Mother was a figurehead. She was really, really fantastic during the Second World War. And I think he's hit the nail right on the head there. Hmm. Oh, sorry, what was that last caller's name?
John.
John, I'll buy you a beer as well, mate.
Now for something totally different. You're not going to buy Isabel a beer, who Anthony knows pretty well. Can I read her remarks there, Anthony? I believe that's your daughter, isn't it?
It could be.
It could be.
I do have a daughter called Isabel.
You do have an Isabel, yeah. So Isabel says, I was invited to speak to a group of students about British culture, and the questions they ask seem so strange to me. I think Americans get a monochrome view of us that seems mostly to do with the upper classes, which is a minute portion of the population. Britain, to me, is Radio 4, the Women's Institute, a fondness for natural history, wit as the highest achievement. The royal family is our 1%, not something many Brits I know are at all excited by. Does that sound something like Isabel would say?
Could be.
Yeah.
We can verify.
That's probably not safe to say. Yeah, that's your daughter. Do you think she makes some wise points there?
I liked what she said about Radio 4 and things like that. Yeah, it goes back to what I said about what is it to be British, you know, which is a good question.
Wit is the highest achievement.
Wit is
Certainly, very important.
The ability not to take yourself too seriously is absolutely crucial part of being British.
And to be able to deal with political differences without sort of severing personal relationships.
Yes.
I think there is an appropriation that's going on, though, that's underlying the conversation, which is part of the monarchist and royalist agenda. I would say, having been born in England in 1965 and grown up in a street where many of the people who were around us as Irish immigrants were veterans of World War II, survivors of the Burma campaign, and also the war in Europe, that really it's the Second World War and the Reconstruction, the first majority Labour government, that really puts and undermined all that classist nonsense that went on before. The fact that everyone agreed that, you know, everyone should get educated, that they should have a health service, that, you know, when a working class lad from Liverpool dies in Japan or Burma or in Europe, that is as much of a loss as an officer cadet from Sandringham or Sandhurst. I think this was, you know, the 66,000 people that died in bombing of the industrial areas. It wasn't just London. It was also Birmingham, Coventry, Belfast, and in Scotland too. There's a tremendous bond that people go through as a result of not just the war, but the effort to put the war behind us, leave our imperial past and racist policies across the world off, and find a new balance, a new England. And that was nothing to do with Queen Elizabeth.
Well, here's an email from Leonard saying, Evan, what a joke. You're worried about the monarchy in the modern age? Our society in the United States is much more inegalitarian. Colin, you want to weigh in on that?
Well, I think just on basics, like, you know, where the rubber hits the road when you have a parent that's elderly and needs care, who's there to help? In England, you have got a National Health Service. If you have a pulmonary embolism and you need expensive surgery, who's there? Just public transport, basic things that affect people's everyday lives that we take for granted. I've spent 28 years living in the United States, and the number of times I've had to explain over and over again, having a national healthcare service is not some kind of supernatural miracle event that occurs when stars are aligned. The British have had it since 1945 because they wanted it. That's coming up to a century. Most of the advanced economies have it. And I think that's where you get it's the monarchy plus. But I think if you'd had a really divisive government, I think if Churchill had not won out and elements of the British monarchy had settled with the Nazi government and stayed out, you would have seen a very different pattern, an expansion of empire and a buying into a Nazi racist ideology, which the first majority Labour government ended. That was going to be a new page.
As we get ready to wrap the hour, Tom in Greece had called in wanting to talk about the expense of the royals. There's a lot of information on this, everything from the Atlantic Monthly, Boston Globe, Daily Mail, and the newly released accounts show that the royal family costs British taxpayers about 65 pence, 88 cents per year on average per person. That's the cost of a high-end stamp for the average person. The cost of travel, £4.5 million for the past year, and the palace reporting that Elizabeth, 91 years old, did 162 official engagements in her 91st year.
Yep.
So that's a lot of engagements. Most of the travel costs is paid by the taxpayers because it's security. Personal expenses paid by the royal family. But it comes out to about 88 cents per person per year is what taxpayers pay. Worth it to you, Jeff.
Fine. No problem with that whatsoever. If we didn't have a monarchy, we would have the politicians going around doing that, and they would be costing exactly the same.
Okay.
Actually, a lot more.
A lot more, yes.
Colin says. All right, Anthony, some quick final thoughts from you. What do you think is going to happen? Do you think the monarchy is going to be status quo for a while?
I think it will continue evolving with, say, William. If William... it's due to be Charles, isn't it?
That's not what the tabloids say. He might abdicate
yes,
to William.
Yes, absolutely.
He's been waiting for years.
Difficult to know. He's probably more old school.
You're saying he might? You really think he might?
Yeah, I think he might.
I think he might. I'd love to see Charles King, but I think he might. I think he might abdicate in favor.
Okay, yeah. Well, I've really enjoyed the conversation, and safe travels. When do you head home?
Saturday, actually.
Well, enjoy your week in
Rochester.
Thank
you very much. Thank you very much.
And thank you, and continued good health, no yes. matter who and what the healthcare form is for you.
Thank you.
Sir Jeff Ward.
Thank you very much, Dave.
Very much so. Anthony Davis, when are you heading home?
1st of June.
1st of June, so you've got some time?
Yes, I'm going to enjoy the sunshine.
Well, welcome, and thank you for taking the time to join us on the program today.
Thank you. It's been a pleasure.
Colin Coffey, you're going home now, aren't you? The day off?
On my bicycle.
On your bicycle. We'll see you around Rochester. Let people know where they can find you. It's always nice to bump into you in your place of work.
Oh, Renewing Massage at 728 South Avenue.
Renewing Massage. Great. It's great stuff there. That's not a paid advertisement. I don't know Colin personally, but I know a little bit. But I know people who have gone there. They've always enjoyed it. Thank you for taking the time.
Thank you.
And for all of, whether you're a loyalist or opposing the monarchy, thanks for the discussion to all of our listeners this hour. Rob Braden, a loyalist, the engineer. Megan Mack, vividly opposed. I'm Evan Dawson, always neutral. I'm mostly kidding. Have a great afternoon. Talk to you tomorrow.